Hi, I'm Amy Goodman, host of Democracy Now! For more than 15 years, CJSF 90.1 FM has been bringing Democracy Now! To the greater Vancouver area every weekday at 11 a.m. From New York, this is Democracy Now!
Pains me. Pains many others, survivors who survived, because we have been decoding our painful story to tell the world as a warning about the danger of nuclear weapons. I want the world to wake up to the reality of this totally unacceptable reality. And I hope more people would stand up and say, we're not going to take this nonsense anymore.
The G7 meeting in Hiroshima, Japan, has wrapped as the United States and its allies pledge more military support for Ukraine, including U.S. training on F-16 fighter jets. But G7 leaders failed to make progress on nuclear disarmament. We'll speak to a survivor of the 1945 U.S. atomic bombing of Hiroshima. Then the NAACP issues a formal travel advisory for Florida, saying the state under Governor Ron DeSantis has become, quote, hostile to black Americans. Meanwhile, PenAmerica and Penguin Random House have sued a Florida school board for banning books. We'll speak to the head of PenAmerica, Suzanne Nossel, and Professor Kelly Carter Jackson.
Distracted by the things that Ron DeSantis is trying to do. He is trying to steal our joy, to make us feel bad about being black, but we are not tragically colored.
Plus, we go to Ecuador, where President Guillermo Lasso has dissolved parliament in order to avoid being impeached. We'll speak to former Ecuadorian presidential candidate Andres Arauz. All that and more coming up. Welcome to Democracy Now!, democracynow.org, The War and Peace Report. I'm Amy Goodman. Ukraine's military says its forces still control parts of Bakhmut and are trying to encircle the decimated eastern city following claims by Wagner Group mercenaries they fully captured Bakhmut after months of bloody battles. Wagner says its forces will depart the city starting Thursday through June 1st, leaving Bakhmut to Russia's military. Over the weekend, President Volodymyr Zelensky appeared at the G7 summit in Hiroshima, Japan, where he said photos of Hiroshima after the 1945 atomic bombing by the U.S. reminded him of present-day Bakhmut. Zelensky also met with President Biden in Japan Sunday, as Biden announced another $375 million in military aid to Ukraine. In a reversal, Biden said he'll now support training Ukrainian pilots on U.S.-made F-16 jets. It's not clear who would provide the jets, though Moscow already warned of enormous risks if Ukraine started using F-16s in combat. Biden said he received assurances the fighter jets would not be used by Ukraine over Russian territory. Earlier today, Russian shelling again knocked out power to the Zaporizhzhia nuclear plant, forcing it to rely on backup diesel generators to prevent a nuclear disaster. The International Atomic Energy Agency warns the plant remains extremely vulnerable. In Greece, the conservative prime minister, Kyriakos Mitsotakis, celebrated after his new Democracy Party won over 40% of seats in Sunday's parliamentary elections, though he called for a second round to ensure an outright victory rather than forming a coalition government. The leftist Syriza party, which came to power on an anti-austerity platform in 2015, won just 20% of seats, while a progressive party led by former Greek finance minister Yanis Varoufakis failed to qualify for parliament. Mitsotakis, who came to power in 2019, ran on an anti-immigrant platform and touted his government's efforts to slow the arrival of asylum seekers on Greek shores. The New York Times reports a dozen asylum seekers from the Horn of Africa who arrived on the Greek island of Lesbos last month were rounded up and abandoned at sea in a clear violation of Greek and international law. Video filmed on April 11th shows Greek authorities locking the migrants inside an unmarked van, transferring them onto a Greek Coast Guard ship and stranding them in the middle of the Aegean Sea. A six-month-old baby was among those left adrift in an emergency inflatable raft. The Turkish Coast Guard eventually rescued the migrants. Officials from the European Commission in Brussels said they were concerned by the footage and called on Greece to, quote, fully respect obligations under the EU asylum rules and international law, including ensuring access to the asylum procedure. In the occupied West Bank, Israeli security forces shot dead three Palestinians during a military raid on the Balata refugee camp in the city of Nablus earlier today. A spokesperson for the Palestinian Authority described the raid as a war crime. Hundreds of Israeli soldiers stormed the refugee camp, demolishing several homes with bulldozers and firing live ammunition and tear gas at residents. Hundreds of people gathered at the men's funeral after the raid. Meanwhile, Israel's far-right national security minister, Itamar Ben-Gvir, entered the Al-Aqsa Mosque compound in occupied East Jerusalem Sunday, declaring Israel in charge of the sacred site. The mosque has been repeatedly targeted with escalating Israeli violence.
It must be said, police and combat soldiers here are doing a wonderful job and again prove who's the landlord of Jerusalem. All of Hamas threats will not help. We are the landlords of Jerusalem and all of the land of Israel.
Sudan's army and the paramilitary rapid support forces have agreed to a seven-day ceasefire starting today and a deal mediated by the U.S. and Saudi Arabia. The warring parties pledged to stop occupying new areas, to allow aid workers to operate safely, and to ensure the safety of civilians and essential infrastructure. Last week, Jordan said its embassy in Khartoum was vandalized, while Kuwait said the residence of an embassy official was also stormed and ransacked. The U.N. said Friday over a million people have been displaced since fighting broke out on April 15th. Hundreds have been killed. Bahrain plans to restore diplomatic relations with Lebanon after severing ties in the fall of 2021 following critical comments made by a Lebanese minister of the Saudi-led war in Yemen. Saudi Arabia and its Gulf allies withdrew their diplomats from Lebanon in response. It's the latest move by Arab nations to resolve disputes and strengthen regional ties. On Friday, Syria's President Bashar al-Assad was welcomed back to his first Arab League summit after 12 years of suspension, while at the same time protesters gathered in and around northern Syria's rebel-held Idlib to condemn his reintegration into the regional body. The U.S. and Papua New Guinea have signed a security pact giving American forces access to the country's airfields and ports as the U.S. seeks to counter Chinese influence and extend its own reach in the Pacific. President Biden was originally slated to attend the signing today in Papua New Guinea, but flew back to Washington after the G7 summit in Japan to resume debt limit negotiations. Secretary of State Antony Blinken filled in instead, meeting with the Prime Minister, James Marape. In Brazil, a prominent indigenous leader from the northern Pará state was shot in the head by two gunmen May 14th in an apparent assassination attempt. Lúcio Tembe survived the assault, underwent surgery. Brazil's federal government said it's investigating whether the attack was related to conflicts with palm oil companies, which have been blamed for land grabbing, deforestation, water contamination, and violence directed at indigenous communities. The European Union has fined the parent company of Facebook and Instagram for violating privacy and data protection rules. Meta was ordered to pay $1.3 billion and told to immediately halt the transfer of data collected from Facebook users in Europe to the United States unless it can be protected from surveillance. The penalty announced earlier today by Ireland's Data Protection Commission is the largest fine ever imposed by the Irish privacy watchdog. Back in the United States, Nebraska's Republican-led legislature passed a bill banning abortion after 12 weeks and gender-affirming treatment for transgender youth. Republican Governor Jim Pillen has backed the bill and said he'll sign it. At least six people were arrested Friday as protesters interrupted legislative debate at Nebraska's Capitol building in Lincoln. State Senator Megan Hunt, whose son is transgender, has joined State Senator Michaela Kavanaugh in a months-long filibuster to block the measure. She's delivered blistering rebukes of her Republican colleagues who pushed through the bill. She spoke last Wednesday.
This person said that they had attempted suicide during this session in Nebraska, a trans person. And I said to them, do not let one of these trash people who I work with be the reason that you're not here. They don't matter. The potential you have for the rest of your life is so much bigger than the damage any of these trash people can do in their little four-year, eight-year term. Senator Kouthis stood up and said that trans kids are suicidal and depressed because they're trans. No, it's because of bullies like her who are trying to legislate their existence and take away their right to be viewed as fully human in our culture and society.
That's Democratic State Senator from Nebraska, Megan Hunt. Newly published documents have revealed persistent and widespread violations of the Foreign Intelligence Surveillance Act by U.S. spy agencies. On Friday, a pair of heavily redacted opinions by the FISA court were made public, showing that in recent years, the FBI misused a foreign intelligence database more than 278,000 times to surveil U.S. citizens. The NSA and CIA also carried out thousands of warrantless queries. Among those targeted were journalists, political commentators, Black Lives Matter protesters arrested after the killing of George Floyd. The data was gathered under Section 702 of the FISA Amendments Act, which permits the mass surveillance of U.S. residents' digital communications without a warrant as long as at least one party is a foreign national. The head of a D.C. police intelligence unit was indicted for warning former Proud Boys leader Enrique Tarrio he would be arrested in connection with the 2020 burning of a Black Lives Matter banner stolen from a Washington church. Lieutenant Shane LaMond was also charged with making false statements to law enforcement. Tarrio was sentenced to 5 months in prison in the case. Separately, a jury convicted Tarrio and other Proud Boys of seditious conspiracy earlier this month over the January 6th Capitol insurrection. Here in New York, hundreds of people led a march that shut down the Brooklyn Bridge Saturday, protesting soaring rent prices and demanding elected officials address the city's worsening housing crisis. Protesters called on new legislation that would protect tenants from sudden evictions and rent hikes, as well as for the city to enact a program for rent assistance. And hundreds gathered to pay respect to slain street performer Jordan Neely at his funeral Friday at the Mount Nebo Baptist Church in Harlem. Reverend Al Sharpton delivered the eulogy.
Jordan's mother was killed, and her funeral was right here. And Jordan sat right there and watched his mother funeralized, who'd been chopped up. And he'd never been the same. Jordan was not annoying someone on the train. Jordan was screaming for help.
Neely's friends and family were joined by a number of prominent New York leaders, including Congressmember Alexandria Ocasio-Cortez. Mayor Eric Adams was not in attendance. He's been called out for demonizing unhoused and mentally ill New Yorkers and for his tepid response to Neely's chokehold killing by a fellow subway rider. A white ex-Marine who's since been charged with manslaughter faces 15 years in jail. Outside, the funeral protesters continued to demand justice for Jordan Neely.
We're going to let him die in vain! Right! We're going to stand together, and we're going to let Eric Adams know that this is unacceptable, and a chokehold is not going to happen anymore.
And those are some of the headlines. This is Democracy Now!, democracynow.org, The War and Peace Report. I'm Amy Goodman. The G7 summit wrapped up Sunday in Hiroshima, Japan. Much of the summit focused on two issues, the war in Ukraine and China. President Biden announced $375 million more in military aid for Ukraine. He also pledged to begin training Ukrainian forces on flying U.S.-made F-16 fighter jets. Biden did not offer to send any F-16s, but the U.S. has lifted its opposition to allies supplying the warplanes to Ukraine. Britain and the Netherlands have announced plans to work together to help provide Ukraine F-16s. President Biden spoke Sunday.
You know, in my private meeting with President Zelensky after the G7 meeting and with his staff, I told him the United States, together with our allies and partners, is going to begin training Ukrainian pilots and fourth-generation fighter aircraft, including F-16s, to strengthen Ukraine's Air Force as part of a long-term commitment to Ukraine's ability to defend itself.
I have a flat assurance from Zelensky that they will not use it to go on and move into Russian geographic territory. But wherever Russian troops are within Ukraine in the area, they would be able to do that.
Ukrainian President Volodymyr Zelensky, who attended the G7 in Hiroshima, thanked Biden for his support.
We are very thankful. I think it will give us more strong positions on the battlefield. So we were thankful that that is a new package. I really didn't know the details, but I know that you gave us very big package during this year. It's more than 37 billion. My appreciations. We never forget. Thank you.
While in Hiroshima, President Biden and other world leaders paid tribute to the victims of the world's first nuclear attack, the U.S. bombing of Hiroshima on August 6, 1945, laying wreaths at the Hiroshima Peace Memorial and planting a tree. But President Biden did not issue an apology for the attack. A group of anti-nuclear activists rallied on the streets.
Japan and the United States are trying to conduct a war of aggression on China. I am protesting because I absolutely cannot accept the fact that they are in Hiroshima, a place where an atomic bomb was dropped, trying to hold a meeting to start a nuclear war.
I'm absolutely against the war. I'm against using nuclear weapons. That is why I'm here. This summit is being held to prepare for a nuclear war, so we, the Union, need to do whatever we can to protest against it.
We go now to Hiroshima, where we're joined by Setsuko Thurlow, who survived the U.S. bombing of Hiroshima in 1945 that killed about 140,000 people. She's devoted her life to nuclear disarmament and the Ban Treaty process. In 2017, she was chosen to accept the Nobel Peace Prize on behalf of the International Campaign to Abolish Nuclear Weapons, or ICAN. She's joining us on the phone from Hiroshima. It's great to have you back with us, Setsuko Thurlow. If you can respond to the G7 meeting and the outcome this weekend held in Hiroshima, where you are.
Well, I came to Hiroshima from Canada, where I live. I wanted to be part of this whole excitement that the world leaders are coming to Hiroshima and to discuss the nuclear disarmament. And the people here are so excited, so happy to have the opportunity to give the leaders the opportunity to be with us, to be in the center of the calamity and catastrophe, and to have a profound encounter themselves with the meaning of the dawn of the nuclear age. And people had a great anticipation and excitement. They prepared for this with all kinds of recommendations to the leaders. But somehow their wishes were not fully listened. To put it bluntly, for us survivors who want nothing less than the total disarmament, total abolition of nuclear weapons, and the majority of the citizens of Japan who support survivors idea, to us it was nothing but a disaster. We are feeling more than frustration. It's a fury, anger, and a total disappointment.
Setsuko Thurlow, how do you think the war can end, the war in Ukraine can end?
Well, to me personally, the why we keep hearing about a more military aid and support for war than hearing about the efforts being made for peaceful ceasefire at the earliest possible time. Every day, many, many lives are being killed. And certainly something must be going on, efforts must be being paid for ceasefire. But we don't hear about them. Are they really making that effort? Do they really feel they can win this out? I don't know what's their thoughts. All I can say is it has to stop at the earliest possible chance, no matter what.
And finally, President Biden did not apologize for the atomic bombing of Hiroshima. And then,
excuse
of
me,
course,
I didn't hear you. What did you
President
say?
Biden
excuse
did
me,
not.
I didn't hear you.
President Biden did not apologize for the U.S. dropping the atomic bomb on Hiroshima. Then 3 days later on Nagasaki. Your thoughts?
Well, it's unfortunate he had the opportunity, but he didn't. This time, too, in the joint statement or communique, it kept criticizing the Russians, the Chinese, the North Korea. And why do they fail to look at themselves with the critical eyes? And we don't hear anything evil which is being committed by the West. I mean, of course, as far as the war in Ukraine is concerned, I think Putin should get the total condemnation. I do condemn, no matter what the reason is, to be willing to kill so many human lives. And that's not acceptable. That must stop. But your question was whether the president should have, well, my opinion is yes. United States has committed the crime against humanity, but the United States have never acknowledged any guilt. And, well, this proves old saying, the victims of victors write the history. The U.S. has been condemning.
Well, Setsuko.
Russian behavior. But, yeah.
Setsuko Thurlow, I want to thank you very much for being with us and speaking to us from a hospital in Hiroshima. Setsuko Thurlow, we have spoken to where she lives in Canada, but came to Hiroshima for the G7 summit and the Habakasha, the survivors of the U.S. bombing of Hiroshima, speaking out against nuclear war during this weekend of the meeting of the G7. Setsuko Thurlow has devoted her life to nuclear disarmament and the treaty ban process. In 2017, she was chosen to receive the Nobel Peace Prize on behalf of ICAN, the International Campaign to Abolish Nuclear Weapons, together with its executive director, Beatrice Finn. She's worked as a social worker for decades and founded the Japanese Family Services of Metropolitan Toronto. Next up, the NAACP issues a formal travel advisory for Florida, saying the state under Governor DeSantis has become hostile to Black Americans. Meanwhile, Pen America and Penguin Random House have sued Florida School Board for banning books. Stay with us.
I don't mind failing in this world. I don't mind failing in this world. I'll stay down with the rackety crew, 'cause guessing up there means stepping on you. So I don't mind failing in this world. I don't mind failing in this world. Don't mind failing in this world. Somebody else's definition.
I don't mind failing in this world, performed by the Specials. This is Democracy Now!, democracynow.org, The War and Peace Report. I'm Amy Goodman. The NAACP has issued a formal travel advisory for Florida. In an announcement Saturday, the group said Florida's hostile to Black Americans under Republican Florida Governor Ron DeSantis, who's expected to announce his run for the 2024 presidential nomination this week. The move comes after Florida passed the Stop Woke Act to restrict conversations about race in schools and businesses. DeSantis has also attacked the College Board's Advanced Placement African American Studies course and on Monday signed into law a measure that blocks colleges from spending public funds on diversity, equity and inclusion. He also signed a slate of legislation Wednesday targeting the LGBTQ community. NAACP President and CEO Derek Johnson said in a statement, quote, "Let me be clear, failing to teach an accurate representation of the horrors and inequalities that Black Americans have faced and continue to face is a disservice to students and a dereliction of duty to all." The NAACP was joined by the League of United Latin American Citizens, or LULAC, and the LGBTQ rights group Equality Florida. The move comes as tourism is one of Florida's biggest industries. Meanwhile, PenAmerica, the book publishing company, Penguin Random House, and several other authors and parents are suing the Pensacola, Florida School Board for banning books on race and LGBTQ issues from school libraries, saying they violate the First Amendment. For more, we're beginning with Suzanne Nossel, CEO of the free expression group PenAmerica. Suzanne, welcome back to Democracy Now! Can you explain what this lawsuit is all about?
Sure. We are suing in Escambia County to challenge the removal of books from classroom and school libraries. There are well over 100 books that have been put under review and taken off classroom shelves for protracted periods while review processes are underway. That's in contravention of the best practice guidelines that the American Library Association and others say you should follow. National Coalition Against Censorship, whereby books, if there's an objection, should remain on the shelves while those objections are adjudicated. And then there are more than 10 books that have been banned entirely. And this effort disproportionately targets books by and about authors of color, LGBTQ narratives. And so we're bringing a challenge under both the First and the 14th Amendments to the Constitution. The First Amendment, because these bans and removals violate children's right to read. And the 14th Amendment, because they raise equality concerns when books are targeted based on the stories told, who's telling the stories, what the color or the sexual orientation of the characters. That violates our protections for equality in education. And so we're asking the school board to put these books back on the shelves and the court to vindicate children's right to read.
Can you explain really what this Stop Woke Act says and how it allows for banned books? How specific is it? Or is it that the vagueness is what is so threatening?
It's really the vagueness. I mean, this idea that teachings that could create racial tension or make people feel guilty on the basis of their racial identity are prohibited, raise all kinds of questions for teachers and librarians about what books might be construed to fall afoul of those restrictions. If a kid reads a book and they ask a question that demands an answer that could touch upon some of those sensitive topics, does the teacher risk being disciplined? Do they risk a complaint from a parent that could run all the way up the chain? And that's really the way censorship works deliberately. Vague laws that don't just pinpoint what specifically is out of bounds, but rather cast a broad chill, a pall on education. It's teaching our children that there are ideas and books that are so dangerous that they ought to be off limits, which runs counter to the very role and purpose of public schools in a democracy, to be an incubator for citizenship, where you learn how to engage with all sorts of people, all sorts of ideas.
From your press release, in Escambia County, nearly 200 books have been challenged. 10 books have been removed by the school board. 5 books were removed by district committees. 139 books remain restricted, requiring parental permission. You also write, children in a democracy must not be taught that books are dangerous. Talk more about the specific books that are banned and how exactly you plan to get these books back on the bookshelves.
Yeah, sure. Look, it's a long list of books, and it's quite shocking to see things like Toni Morrison's The Bluest Eye or Judy Blume's Forever. You know, that's a book that I grew up with that, yes, was a little bit edgy in my time, but decades have passed. These are things that have been on the shelves that have been treasured by young people for long periods of time. Works of literature, and Toni Morrison, a Nobel laureate in literature. So to ban her books, you know, the idea that they have no value, no redeeming value for children is outrageous. There are also books like And Tango Makes Three, which is a story about same-sex penguins in the Central Park Zoo who that raise a baby penguin. And this is being objected to because it's seen as promoting LGBTQ lifestyles. Or Uncle Bobby's Wedding, about a child whose uncle gets married to a man. And so it's a real effort to both expunge